today looking at a few myths cannabis CEOs, O's, and or investors might think that may or may not be true. So let's kind of dive into those and even maybe a couple more. So first on the list, most people don't believe this at this point. They're getting around this, but we still do see this, that a cannabis owner will come in and think, oh, they still can get deductions. Or even if they realize 280E says, and in the tax code it says, if you sell cannabis, if you're a farm, a dispensary, a processing plant, you get no deductions and no credits on your tax returns. Now, some people flat out don't even realize that. But once you get past that, we find, I get this question all the time, even from accountants, even after they read that, where it says no deductions and no credits, people are always asking, well, what about the solar credit or the R&D credit or what about accelerated depreciation? On and on and on. It says no deductions or credits. So let's just dispel that myth right now. The current tax laws are very punitive on cannabis. Hopefully that will be changing. Hopefully we'll get cannabis off Schedule 1. I don't think it's going to happen. It could happen after the midterm elections. It looks like they don't have quite enough votes in the Senate to happen right this second, so we're probably going to be delayed yet again, but the industry's still moving forward very rapidly. It's never going backwards. It's just whether you look at state level, county level, federal level, it's going forward. It's gone massively forward the last 4 years, and it will continue that way because, again, 7 out of 10 Americans want medical cannabis, and that's the number one reason why we're going to see that happening. The next myth we're going to go on, and this is very common, and whether or not a owner tells me this, they demonstrate it by how they operate their company. They think, oh, we don't need complex cost accounting. We don't need to build a permanent audit trail every month. We don't need controls and support, or even to do 47111 correctly. That's a bad idea. If you're going to start, and by the way, we're going to see, probably a couple hundred thousand new companies in the eastern half of the U.S. alone over the next 2 to 3 years. That's a lot of startups. Many of those are going to be funded 5, 10, 15, even 20 million or more on day one. What does that mean? When you fund companies with a lot of money because they're very expensive to open up a farm, indoor, outdoor, or a dispensary chain or whatever, you need dollars. When you need dollars, you're going to get investors, you're going to get lenders, other stakeholders. So, you look at the people, the company, you're going to have owners, you're going to have management team, board of directors, investors, lenders, all these stakeholders that want to make sure things are done right. First and foremost, so you can just run your company correctly. Farming or product manufacturer, or retail even, are very difficult industries. So you want to make sure you actually have great internal controls, corporate governance. You're building out a permanent audit trail for every client every single month. You're doing cost accounting. You're doing it correctly. And by the way, CEOs, if you don't know if you're doing cost accounting or not, I can almost guarantee you you're not. I've almost never found cost accounting even attempted at most cannabis companies we see. And the people that do attempt it, they usually don't have the right tools and systems and work papers to do it correctly. But we want to make sure we're doing that correctly. First and foremost, we need to know how much it costs to grow a pound of weed if we want to have any hopes of running our business correctly. But then under 47111, if we're not doing GAAP level cost accounting on our inventory, that's our only real way to lower taxable income. So we can get a lot of cost into that plant as it grows. Lighting, utilities, labor even, rent, all kinds of costs. There's about 20 costs we can get into that inventory. When that inventory sold, it becomes cost of goods sold. And so the more cost we get in inventory, the lower our taxable income is going to be, because cost of goods sold is a reduction of income on the tax return, even for under 280E. Why? It's not a deduction. It's not a credit. It's a return of capital under the tax code, and so it's allowable. So we want to be making sure we're doing that correctly. So if you're a Canna owner and you're not doing that right, you should get a Dope CFO VIP ASAP to do these things. Build out that permanent audit trail. Do the correct cost accounting. Your tax will be done correctly. You'll be better able to run your business and better able to predict cash flows as well. Myth three is around compliance. We see this a lot as well. You know, when I was 5-6 years ago, when I was out CFO on the farm, you know, everyone knew there was a lot of compliance to be done, but no one was real. Everyone was busy with their own job. Oh, I'm supposed to water the plants, or I'm doing marketing, or I'm the CEO, or you're the accounting CFO, or whatever. Who is doing regulatory compliance? So you need to find someone who's skilled that can actually do those issues, because we've got massive state level compliance, and you want to make sure you're following those rules, because they will be out visiting your farm or dispensary or whatever. Then you've got OSHA. OSHA also is visiting and has a big target for cannabis companies, and they're shutting people down. I saw a fine here of $600,000, an OSHA fine. That's the Occupational Safe and Health Authority. And we've got USDA, FDA, EPA even, lots and lots of regulations. So we need to make sure someone has got all the different compliance. And I'm not even talking about accounting or tax. That's just state level compliance to make sure we're doing things right on that front. Let's hit another one. Here's another one that I get all the time, both from people wanting to get in and start a dispensary or farm, or someone who's already in. So yes, cannabis companies, generally speaking, are going to have high revenue. So whether you're a farm or dispensary, you should be seeing multi-million, 5 to 10 million or more. We've seen, you know, some dispensaries, single locations can have revenues in 10 to 20 million. And rarely will you see a client with one dispensary. They'll usually have two or three, or they'll be growing. So lots and lots of revenues, but that doesn't mean net income is going to be high, particularly with this punitive tax laws, until that goes away. And we know this kind of intuitively. We've seen farmers struggle for the last century. We've seen retailers struggle. Retail, farming and retail, the biggest two pieces of cannabis. Those are really tough industries to make any net income, even if you're on top of things. Why? Well, look at the farming end. There's two big variables in your revenues and your net income right off the bat. How much can you grow? And you could have all kinds of issues with your growth that could make your forecast not. Could have this happened out in Oregon, you know, next door to the cannabis farm, there's a blueberry farm, and they were dumping chemical pesticides via helicopter or whatever, a little plane, and it drifted over into the organic, clean, green cannabis farm that contain and destroy crops. So there's lots of issues that you can have on production and just not having your act together and not growing well. On top of that, pricing. No one controls pricing of your product. And so, you know, whether you sell wheat or cannabis or pull oil and gas out of the ground, you are subject to wild price swings, and that will continue. So you've got to be well capitalized. And then on top of all that, just to run a farm is incredibly expensive. The utilities, the labor, the farming equipment needed, the rent or leases, all the labor you're going to need. It's just not an easy undertaking. So when you get through all that, and then, oh, by the way, we got to pay a ton of tax to the government because of the penalties around the current tax code. If you're making a net income, you're either... Well, first off, if you're making a huge net income, I would more than bet your accounting is not correct, especially your tax return. Same on the dispensary side. Retail, you know, we know this already. You know, my wife had a dishware shop, and you buy a product for $1,000 or $500, you sell it for $1,000. That leaves you $500 to pay the rent, employees, utilities, insurance, all those other costs. Maybe you get net income of 8%, pay some tax, and you've got a little bit of net income in there at a retail. But in a cannabis dispensary, they get the biggest penalty of the tax code. So if a dispensary is making any net income, it's going to be they're either not doing 280E 471 correctly, or it should be a very small net income. Now, that said, for all of that on the net income side, can you, then why the heck would anyone, you know, open up any one of these companies? Well, it's the same reason when we go back 20 years to high tech. How did all these companies, Amazon, Google, Facebook, they lost money for years, but their revenues were growing, they were gaining market share, they were building a brand and a product, and eventually, over long periods of time, they were profitable, but even before then, their valuations were very high. So we see in cannabis right now, in the public markets, you can go up to, you know, look at Tilray or other companies that are publicly traded in Canada, very high valuations, even though they're losing money. Same in the private markets. We've seen dispensaries sell decent valuations based on revenues and their location, not net income. So the valuations might be focused on many things: the team, the product, the brand, the market share, how many verticals there are. So there's lots and lots of ways where they can still make a lot of money. And then the theory is too, if you can just get your company, you're capitalized enough to sustain losses or low net income or whatever until the markets open up with full legalization, and then the capital is going, it's already flooding in, but it's really going to flood in when cannabis comes off Schedule One. And at that point, you can, many of these companies will be looking to do a big exit as well. And then it will continue on kind of after that happens, like we see this in our wineries, our craft breweries. We'll have huge players like Coors and Budweiser, and we'll have small craft breweries and smaller players in the product side, and that will continue. So not everyone's going to be gobbled up by the big companies. And how do we know this? Because we can watch the liquor industry of the last 100 years and see that there's always room. You know, wine is a 100-year-old industry. You could still, I've seen people here open up wineries in Central Oregon and make a ton of money recently. So they weren't too late. They weren't 100 years too late. You can still do it today. So anyway, that is my talk on some myths. There's even more myths around non-cannabis divisions that we've talked about in other calls, and entity selection. If you're starting a cannabis company, don't jump in and just start making a bunch of entities. We found a client with 20 entities the other day. Horrible idea. It was a startup. Really bad idea to go in with 20 entities, but be very careful on that. There's a lot of myths around, oh, I can beat 280E by just having a bunch of entities. Will not work. So be careful on that. And do some brainstorming. Pull your attorney in, your corporate and your tax attorney. Pull in your dope CFO VIP. Do some brainstorming. Talk to the investors. Look at each investor's goal and tax situation, whether they have asset protection is more important or tax minimization. And then you can strategize and get the right structure. But don't just jump in and say, oh, we need 3 LLCs, and that's all we need to do. All right. Well, thank you all, everyone, for joining me, and hopefully this helped some of you with some of the myths.